There are some truly sad words in our world. One of the words that I find to be quite sad is rehoming. If you're not familiar with rehoming, it's applied in at least two different settings. Sometimes a pet is rehomed. Someone takes in a pet, maybe for a period of time, and they no longer want the pet, or they're tired of the pet, or maybe a child moves out and they rehome. They find a new home for the pet. Now that may not be too bad, but that word rehome is sometimes applied to children. There are, in this country and certainly in other countries, children who are unwanted, unloved. And those children are rehomed. One would think that if a parent has a child, that child would be loved, that child would be cared for in the greatest and the deepest possible way. But we know, each one here tonight knows that that's not always true. Sometimes children are rehomed. In fact, as you start looking at the idea of rehoming children, you find some other language, some other terminology, which is also disturbing. I'm definitely not fond of it, but there is baby dumping. And you can imagine what that means. A more clear term or clear time or terminology might be child abandonment. When we look at some of the children in our society, and really throughout the world, we find that there are certainly some examples where kids are loved and treasured. But we also, as we look at society, find that some kids are treated no better than piles of trash. In the book of Exodus, chapter 17, we've been looking at Exodus on Sunday nights. We have some parents who were concerned about their children. You may remember that God's people at this time in Hebrew history were thirsty. The Hebrews, they go to Moses and they explain the problem of thirst and they say, we're out here, we need water, and we're going to die. Moses, not only we, the adults, are we going to die, but our animals are going to die. And then perhaps to make their plea a little more impassioned, they point to their children and they say, our children are going to die. We need water. We don't have water. Exodus 17 verse 3 says, the people argued that their children were going to perish. Now back there in Exodus chapter 17, the people had some issues. They didn't have everything figured out. They were guilty, certainly, of some wrongdoing. But at least if we can credit them with one thing, it seems to me that they did have some concern about their offspring. And tonight, that's what we want to think about. In Scripture, we find multiple references about the need for parents to care for their children. One might expect, and I think certainly from a Christian perspective, that there is almost always going to be that natural, that instinctive, that generous, that automatic love for kids. But when we look at our world, we find that that's not always what's out there in the world. In the book of Titus, and this is our basic text tonight, Titus chapter 2. We have a book, only three chapters, it's not that long. But in Titus chapter 2, we have some information about children. In just a couple minutes, I'm going to be reading from Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5. To give you a little bit of the background, in Titus chapter 2, verse 1, Titus was told that he needed to be involved with sound doctrine. That word, which is translated sound, simply means healthy doctrine, good doctrine. And in Titus chapter 2, verse 2, we have some information about older men. Titus was given some information about how the aged men in the congregation should behave. Then beginning with Titus chapter 2 and verse 3, he turns to the older ladies. He says, I also have some information about the older women, and here's how they are supposed to behave. And then we get down to Titus chapter 2, starting with verse 3 and reading down through verse 5. He says that aged women likewise be reverent in demeanor, not slanderers, nor enslaved to much wine, teachers of that which is good. And then in verse 4, we start coming to the key points that we want to cover tonight. That they, that is these older women, that they may train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. And then verse 5. To be sober-minded, chaste, workers at home, kind, being in subjection to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. God said that the younger women who had children, they needed to be taught how to love those children. Now, if that verse were not associated with any kind of context, we might look at it and think, that sounds really strange. Here were women, Christian women, younger women, and a preacher is told they need to be taught, they need to be not just taught, they need to be trained how to love their children. Why on earth would that verse be in the Bible? Is it connected to anything, which helps us understand it a little bit better? Well, I think it is. And as far as I can tell, the connection is in chapter 1, Titus chapter 1, verse 11. For general context of what's taking place in the book, this verse sort of sets the tone for all three chapters. He says, and he's talking about false teachers, whose mouths must be stopped. Men, that would be a reference to false teachers. He said, men who overthrow whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. Zero in on those words, overthrow whole houses. Now, as you look at those words, you might immediately think that he's talking about a personal household, that there were homes within the congregation, there were various families, and within those individual families, false teachers were stirring things up in such a way where those homes were being overthrown, where distractions were being created and problems were being created, and households were collapsing. That very well may be true. There is, though, as we look at Titus 1 verse 11, there may be an extra or an alternative explanation. And that is, when he talks about these households, it may not be an individual family. But maybe he's talking about a congregation. Maybe he's talking about a congregation which was overthrown. And again, individual households certainly could have been part of that as well. But the false teachers were creating some kinds of difficulties. Now, we don't have all the details, at least not all the details that we might like. But clearly, as we look at Titus chapter 1, verse 11, there were false teachers, and it's evident that they were creating some serious problems on the island of Crete. Some wives were apparently not doing all that they should have been doing when it came to their home responsibilities, not only with the husbands, but also with the kids. And that very well might be related to the false teachers back in chapter 1, verse 11. Perhaps the false teachers were influencing some of those younger ladies in the wrong ways. And Paul comes along and says to Titus, these guys have to be stopped. Their mouths need to be closed because they're creating circumstances that are not good. If false teachers were behind the problems in the homes and maybe congregations, things have not changed all that much in the last 2,000 years. We still have, as we look at society, some terrible, some poor influences for parents. And those evil influences are still destroying homes and sometimes congregations. Just last Thursday, if you saw it in the news, there was a couple in Greenville, Tennessee. The mom, the dad, I believe that they're both about 30 years of age, they were charged with child neglect. I'm not sure why the police were called, but the daughter of these parents was found unattended on the street. Three-year-old running around out there in the street. And as the police came and dealt with the situation, they found that the three-year-old didn't have any shoes on, didn't have any socks on, didn't have any top on. Pajama bottoms was it. We have, as we look at society, and I'm amazed, one of the things that I find so peculiar, I've dealt with people in, sometimes in the penal system over the years, and sometimes it's a parent who got involved with drugs, and the first thing they tell me is, I love my children so much, they mean everything to me in the world. And the question that goes through my mind is, if that's true, why did you do this behavior that led you to this particular place? You're separated from your child. You tell me that you love your child. You tell me that the compassion and the love for your child exceeds anything in this world. And yet the very behavior that you engaged in denies that in the greatest possible sense. So we have, as we look at our current culture, and again, it's not a new problem, but we have parents who are confused, very confused, when it comes to understanding what it means to love a child. I suspect that if we could stop people on the street and ask 100 or 1,000 people, what does it mean to love your child? There would be some people who say, well, I don't know. I've never really thought about that question. And maybe if we give them enough time, they can come up with some answers, but that would be a new thought for them. Paul, as he writes to Titus, he says, there is a need. There is a pressing need for those younger women, not just to be taught, but those younger women, they need to be trained. They need to be trained to love their husbands. They need to be trained to love their children. Helping parents. And mothers are specifically mentioned, but I certainly would not omit dads. They need to be taught how to love their offspring. Paul did not say whether these older women would be within the family. We might assume that. But who were the older women and who were the younger women? Maybe it was within a family. Maybe it was a mother-daughter. Maybe it was a grandmother. Granddaughter relationship. Maybe it was someone who was not blood related. Maybe it was someone who had a limited amount of contact with that Christian woman. But he makes the point in a somewhat general way. And tonight we're going to make the application also in a somewhat general way. When we think about older Christians, oftentimes women, but sometimes men, they have, if they've raised at least one child, they have the ability to sometimes offer some insight on marriage, which Paul discusses in Titus chapter 2, as well as child rearing. And again, that insight might be offered to a daughter. It might be offered to a grandchild. It might be offered to someone in the workplace. It might be offered to someone in the neighborhood. There might be any number of places where that information is given. As we look at our society, though, If Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5 were tried in many places, I'm convinced that a lot of women, younger women, would be offended by any such offer of help. We live in a time currently, and I'm not casting stones, I'm simply stating it like it is. We live in a time where a lot of people in the younger ages right now, they think that they have it all figured out. And if they have any question, Google or Facebook will be right at the fingertips, and that's going to give them all the information that they possibly need. If you watch people who raise children, they almost always have some questions. Kids don't come with a step-by-step instruction manual. So at some point, whether it's how to put on the first diaper, whether it is information about feeding the child, information about discipline, when people have children, they have some parenting questions. If you do anything at all on Facebook, and several here have at least some involvement with that, you will find, if you read through some of the posts, some parents asking questions about parenting. They're out there. And they're out there on a fairly regular basis. I do not dispute that there can be some great online tools and resources that can help parents, regardless of their age. Some of the online advice might come from a person who's never raised a child. And maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It might be the case that some advice is coming from someone who is raising children that are at an age which is younger than the age that you may be seeking advice for. And when we think about picking up advice from the web, it's also possible to get some bad advice. There's a lot of bad advice, Facebook and other places. And yet, in spite of all the technology that we have, and in some respects the additional resources that we have, we still have to look at what Paul says in Titus chapter 2. He did not say to this preacher, oh, hey, preacher, make sure that they get a little advice from older folks, give that to the younger people. He didn't say, just hand them a book. He didn't say to Titus, preach a series of sermons on parenting and it's all going to be good. Or he didn't say, go down and find grandma and grandpa and have them give a little information. A brief internet post is not what is consistent with Titus chapter 2. Paul, as he writes to this young preacher, he says, you train. That's an important word. You train those younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. Now, men are not specifically mentioned. Ladies sometimes may have some better insights in this area than men do. But certainly some males can also sometimes be helpful in this area of study. God knew what he was doing when he had the information penned through Paul in Titus chapter 2. He knew that it's right for parents to get some help from others. He also knew a great resource as far as where that help can come from. And that would be older Christians, older women, women who had either raised kids or had raised kids to the point where they had gone through some of the things that younger women might be facing. There is a need to train people who are parents because our world has always been filled with a lot of bad advice. As I mentioned earlier, when you start thinking about kids, they don't come with a step-by-step instruction manual. We might like that. We might appreciate that. But that's simply not how it works. And even if kids did come with that kind of manual, I'm persuaded that a lot of people would simply not read it. God said that there is a resource for help. That resource is found in the lives of older Christians. And Titus was to teach that that resource was to be used. Now, some might say, well, okay. As I look at Titus chapter 2, I understand the references there to older women. But Brad, tell me, how old is old or older? Well, that's going to be a little bit subjective. If at the age of 18 you're looking at someone who's 30, you're probably going to say, well, that's an older person. They're 12 years older than I am. And certainly if we have on this hand a person who is 25 and on this hand we have a person who is 50, one is obviously younger and one is obviously older. There is some leeway when it comes to older. And some of that leeway is going to be based on the age that we are currently at. But if we're going to properly raise our children, we should want to seek out the very best resources for them. And one of the top parenting resources, according to God, would be those older members, especially ladies, who have generally been involved with raising kids. Now some, as they consider that information from Titus chapter 2, they'll look at that information and say, not me. Oh, I know what it says. It's easy enough to see what the point is, but I'm not going to do that because your ways are old ways. And the world's changed. Things are different. And those old ways are out of date. Or another person might say, we're not going to seek out the kind of help described in Titus chapter 2 because I feel like I'm going to look bad. It'll make me look bad as a parent. God says there is a valuable resource in congregations, older members, however we define that word older. And God said through Titus, you encourage that. Those older members need to train the younger. Now, an older member hears that and says, okay, boy, I'm ready to go. I'll fix them up. Don't be pushy. That's not the golden rule in action. An older Christian may know more. But knowing more does not mean that we know all. Older Christians need to be willing to share, and younger Christians need to be willing to receive that information. Earlier, I highlighted the word train in Titus chapter 2, and I want to go back there and look at that word for a little bit, because even though that word train is only found here in the New Testament, it is an important word. A highly respected source which defines words which are not often used in the New Testament gave a three-part definition for the word train, and I want to look at all three parts. He said, first of all, part number one, that word train means that you give or you impart a sense of moderation. Part two, when it comes to train, he says that means to moderate excess. Part three, he said it means to restore their senses to people who are raving. Now, those definitions were definitions that I had to think about for a little bit, but I think they deserve close consideration. Let's consider those definitions in light of Titus chapter 2, verse 4. When it comes to children, God says that the people involved, the parents involved, especially the moms, they need to be trained. They need to receive a sense of moderation. Can we see the value in those words? Trying to impart a sense of moderation to parents, especially as it relates to childbearing. That's important because as we look at our time, what do we find when it comes to kids? There are some kids who have no idea about when it comes to moderation. Mom and dad will let them say, do, think just about whatever they want. Wherever the child wants to go, there is no restriction. There is no moderation. The child just thinks life is all about me. There are no limits whatsoever. And as far as that idea about moderation, if a parent is approached about the child and the parent is warned that the child is doing something wrong, well, that's not my child. My child wouldn't do that. Must be another child. You have misunderstood somehow. Rather than ask, rather than consider if a child has done something wrong, some parents are so defensive, they insist that the child is always right. Loving children requires a sense of moderation. And that needs to be instilled in the minds of parents. Paul said that that older Christian is capable of doing that. When we look at the words, we have that second definition. And it is to moderate excess. To moderate excess. One aspect, one element of being a parent is moderating excess. When we think about kids, they can be involved in all kinds of excess. You might find that there is a child who is involved with excess school activities. And you have kids in our day and time, from the time they get up, the alarm may go off at 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and that child is go, 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 until maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And that's the life of the child. If not 5 days a week, 6 days a week, maybe close to 7 days a week. And you see the child come into worship, or you see the child come into school, or you see the child walking down the street, coming home, and I mean, they're just dead on their feet. Why? Because there is no moderation. Now, the parent, in that set of circumstances, might have the very best intention. I want my child to be involved with this, and I don't want my child to miss out on that, and this is so important, and I want my child to have such a full life. And for that younger parent, maybe that makes all the sense in the world. But if there were an older person, in this case a Christian, a member of the congregation who could step in and say, here's something to take a look at, to moderate the excess there, that can benefit the parent, that can benefit the child, it helps all. As we think about that definition for train, we have, as we look at the item, we have that third element as well, and that is to restore to their senses the people who are raving. Sometimes parents, even though they are well-intentioned, they don't get things right. There is excessive behavior. If the excessive behavior is not on the part of the parent, the excessive behavior may be on the part of a child. About 2 years ago, there was an article entitled, 6-month-old babies are using tablets and smartphones. Now think about that. 6-month-old babies are using tablets and smartphones. That's where we've come to as far as a society. In the same article, it was noted that by age 2, a high percentage of children have used a mobile device. I'm not opposed to mobile devices. I'm not opposed to younger people learning about PCs and so forth. But when younger kids lead a life where they are glued to their tablets or they're glued to their smartphones, perhaps even before the age of age two. Isn't it possible that they can learn a thing or two from an older generation that didn't grow up with that? They can, and they need to. They need to realize that there is life outside of cell phones and the internet. Going back to that definition for a moment, to restore to the senses people who are raving, It's possible for parents. They sort of get lost in a sea, lost in a fog. They sometimes lose sense when they're trying to raise a child. And once again, that older Christian can step in and offer some assistance when it's needed. See, at the end of the day, every person should want the same thing. And that is for the children in our life to be loved. When parents engage in an activity which is contrary to that goal, older Christians will hopefully step forward and say, there are some adjustments that could possibly be made. There are some things that you may want to consider. Have you looked at this? Have you considered this? Some older saints, some senior saints may offer assistance in circumstances where that's not appropriate. And they need to be sensitive to that. Sometimes life is different, and there are some things that are true now that maybe were not true in the past. We also have to remember that not all advice is good advice. In cases of parenting, we need to make sure that we try to give the best possible advice so that kids find that godly path. Back in the Old Testament, relatively famous passage, the book of Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 22 through 24. We have God's people at a period where they decided that they were going to intermarry with some pagans. Three specific nations are mentioned. The people of Israel married women from Ashdod, Moab, and Ammon. As you look at what Nehemiah said, you begin to find the consequences of that. The text says that there were some of the kids, they could no longer speak the Jewish language. And there were some of the other kids, they spoke a mixture. Half the children spoke the language of Ashdod or some of the tongue. As you look at that account, as you think about the kids that were raised back there during that time, I'm pretty sure that those parents had some love for the kids. And maybe they provided good houses. Maybe they provided good clothing, and maybe they provided fine food. But you know, as you look at Nehemiah chapter 13, there's one thing that they didn't provide. They failed to provide that right kind of spiritual instruction. As Christians, as we go through life, as we think about parents loving kids, it's possible for us to let the world define what loving a child means. And if that happens, we're probably going to mess things up. In our day and time, when we think about loving a child, often that definition is we love a child, we give him a nice place to stay. We give her good food. We make sure that the children have nice clothing. Sometimes the loving parents are seen as those individuals who provide their kids with the latest electronic devices. Why? By the time my child was two, had a cell phone, had a tablet, and had all the other electronic gizmos. And then because I love my child, we took a family vacation every year. Because I love my child, we bought them a first car. Because I love my child, we got them into college. Because I love my child, we paid for the wedding, and they had such a nice wedding. Sent them off on a nice honeymoon, all those kinds of things. Nothing wrong with any of those activities. But at the end of the day, when we think about loving a child in terms of Nehemiah chapter 13, something very important was missed. Maybe with a lot of those parents, they didn't get involved with the excess, and that's a good thing. But what about the most important thing? Teaching kids the right thing spiritually. If you're raising kids, if you have access to grandchildren, if you're associated with great-grandchildren, if there are kids in the neighborhood, if you're somehow involved with children in the workplace, see if you can offer some of that help that we read about in Titus chapter 2. Working to properly love kids helps a child, helps the parents, and ultimately helps people end up in the right spot spiritually. Ultimately, everything goes back to living the Christian life and living it faithfully. We want to be the best person that we can be as far as an influence. We want to be as helpful as we can be because we're a child of God. Part of that is trying to deal with kids in a good way, whether we have them in our home or whether we've been a parent and now try to help others. Tonight, are we on that road, trying to live the kind of life that God wants for us? Faith, repentance, confession, baptism, those steps you required, that's how it begins. But that's only the beginning point. We then try to live the Christian life every single day, sometimes trying to point kids in that same direction. Tonight, are we on the right course? And are we ready to face another week, living for God faithfully every single day? If not, tonight we'd like to help you write your course. and do that now as we stand and sing the selected song.